watershed. And please present.
Thank you. Brian McFadden of our staff will be introducing this item.
Good afternoon, Chairman Corbett, members of the board. For the record, I'm Brian McFadden of your staff, flow specialist. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce three separate but related presentations that relate to efforts to address low flows and their impacts on salmon, particularly salmon and steelhead, rather. And joining us today to deliver those presentations are Corey Gray from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Corey's an environmental scientist and water rights coordinator for this area. She's going to present the results of voluntary efforts to address low flows locally. Following that, Dan Schultz, who's a senior environmental scientist and supervisor of the Public Trust Unit at the State Water Resource Control Board, Division of Water Rights, will be presenting on the regulatory efforts to address those low flows in local streams. And following that, Dan Schultz, who's also a senior environmental scientist, but supervisor of the In-Stream Flows Unit, will talk about the California Water Action Plan, which is a longer-term effort to address the impacts of low flows on beneficial uses statewide, but it clearly relates to three of our watersheds, including Marquess Creek, and they've got an informative presentation to give to you. And with that, I know blood sugars are probably running low, and I'll just have Corey introduce herself for the record and begin the presentation.
Okay. Oh, I got the clicker. Hi again. I'm Corinne Gray, or Corey Gray. I work with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I am actually the water rights specialist for the entire Bay Delta region. So it involves a lot of driving. So thank you for having us, members of the board, chair, for having me here today. The focus of my presentation today will be on the voluntary drought initiative work that we've been doing in the four tributaries to the Russian River. These four tributaries, as you may or may not know, are Marquess Creek, Mill Creek, Green Valley Creek, and Dutch Bill Creek. We selected these tributaries early on in the process. Basically, as you probably know, in 2014, the governor declared a state of emergency, a drought state of emergency. In April of that year, he directed our department to work with NOAA Fisheries and other stakeholders to come into voluntary drought agreements with landowners to see if we could find creative ways to conserve water in some of our most critical tributaries. As part of that agreement, these four tributaries in the Russian River were highlighted as statewide priorities for our department. It was a pretty long process, but we did start in 2014, and though I am focusing on the four tributaries to the Russian River, especially because John's sitting behind me, I do want to give a special thank you to John Nagel at Gallo, because in some sense he came into the program and was working on a voluntary drought agreement at least a year before we started working on these in the tributaries to the Russian River. So his hard work and honestly just incredible patience really was one of the reasons why we were able to do some of these projects later on in the process. But in the four tributaries in 2015, we we're able to come into some conservation voluntary drought agreements, which effectively where landowners were agreeing to limit their water usage. Most of them were residential. We had about 35 of those. We had 77 winery and vineyard conservation voluntary drought agreements. But today, what I really want to focus on are the flow enhancement voluntary drought agreements we came into, which were actually pretty exciting. I also do want to make a special mention of 71 wine grape growers also voluntarily pledged to reduce their water usage by 25% during this. So one of the things that the department was slowly paying attention to and noticing was that as we went through this four-year drought, it wasn't that, you know, every year we would start seeing declining conditions. It was that every year those declining conditions were appearing earlier in the season. So what this graph is trying to show you is that in September of 2013, in Green Valley Creek specifically, we were seeing flows that were being sustained through August. In 2014, we were seeing drying conditions in July, and by 2015, we were seeing those drying conditions in July. So each year, it was getting harder and harder for us. So we did have a couple of agreements in the Green Valley Creek. Obviously, you heard about them this morning, Jackson Family Wines and Chris Panham and Michael Payne. And they committed to release stored water, so water that they had been storing. One was an on-stream reservoir and one was an off-stream reservoir, releasing those waters into Green Valley Creek. Here is a map that we've put together where it shows the conditions in Green Valley Creek prior to the release. Blue is wet, red is dry. It doesn't come out very well in here, but if you see the hash line, it's yellow. That's actually intermittent. And the two releases in the far left-hand corner is the upstream release, and then the one in the middle of the screen is Bones Lane. That's the Jackson Valley Creek release. And here is the after picture. So after we saw those releases, within a couple weeks, we were seeing improved conditions in certain sections of Green Valley Creek. Here is a close-up of below the Bones Lane release site in August and September. And here are the graphs, and you can see the bump in in-stream flow after the release point, I believe it was August 25th. So one of the sad lessons that we did learn as part of this process is that it's in your best interest to begin your releases before the creek goes dry. sadly, in this particular situation, and not because of any lack of attention from anyone, we were unable to get it together until after a majority of the section of Green Valley Creek did go dry. However, we did get some really interesting, you can see the before on the left and the after on the right. So the amount of water that Jackson Family was releasing was about 25 gallons per minute. So it wasn't really that much water. This is an interesting picture. I don't know, you can see in the top, there's David Hines up in the top, just for perspective. This is looking downstream. David's actually standing at the point of release. So what I thought was really interesting about this particular project is you can see that we got wetted and hydrologically connected conditions upstream of the release point. So actually, while we're releasing water, it was actually backfilling enough that we were seeing improved conditions not only downstream, obviously downstream of the release point, but also upstream of it as well. Here's some information that was put together with the Coho Broodstock program. Mariska at the UC Extension sent these to me. It's a really telling graph in my mind. Just to oversimplify it, this is the juvenile salmonid surveys that they did early in the season, overlaid with our wet-dry mapping at the end of the season. So the blue dots are live fish. The red dots are dead fish, and the yellow dots are probably dead fish, just to keep it simple. So another success that we had that we're really kind of excited about was the Dutch Bill Creek Flow Enhancement Project. And this was Camp Meeker Recreation and Parks District. Actually, David and I and John Green showed up at one of their board meetings, and they were fantastic and kindly agreed to release 45 gallons per minute from their facility into Dutch Bell Creek. I think we all kind of teared up a little bit. We were so excited about it. What we were able to do is they actually have their point of diversion for their area is on the main stem Russian River, and we were able to work with the State Water Resources Control Board and actually file a temporary change petition to allow them to release some of that main stem Russian River water into the upper Dutch Bell area. And as you can see, the red line is 2015 after that release, and it was also on August 25th, which was a very obviously exciting day for us. You can see much significantly improved conditions, and actually we were seeing better conditions just from that release than we had seen in the last couple years of natural flow. So here's some before and after pictures. So this is actually how to do it, is to begin the releases before the creek goes dry. And because of this, we're thinking that we saw some, we were able to maintain the survival of several hundred coho. So here's some of our before and after wet dry mapping. Here's the one release. This is before, and then you can see conditions after. You know, not only improved conditions downstream from the site, but also above it. I'm not quite sure if it goes all the way above. I think that was more of a surveying issue, but we did see both. And again, here we see the juvenile sail-mounted surveys early in the season, the wet-dry mapping late in the season, and some really nice fish were able to survive in this system, so we're pretty proud of that. Here are some of the other types of monitoring work that we did. I don't have some of the better information for Mill Creek. Well, no, actually, in this case, I do. And the State Water Resources Control Board staff put this together for us. And you can see the decline of conditions. So in the bottom is June, where you can see more blue, more wetted conditions. The middle line is July. And then obviously in September, you start seeing a lot of drying in Mill Creek. Again, here's red is dead, blue is alive, and yellow is probably dead. Here also is Marquess Creek, and I don't know if you know about this. We had some kind of unusual conditions in Marquess Creek this year and last year. One of the things that happened is the earthquake in Napa. And as a result of the earthquake in Napa, flow in Marquess Creek suddenly reappeared. It was really interesting. I was getting calls, very panicky calls from landowners thinking that somebody's reservoir had failed. But fortunately for us, it was the earthquake must have opened up some water sources, and we actually saw slightly better conditions this year as well. So we hope to have a little bit more information on that later on. So here you can see, as we went through the last 3 years, conditions were continuing to decline, but the thing I'd like to focus on is Dutch Bell, where we did have our flow enhancement project, and we were able to maintain better conditions in 2015, and Green Valley Creek as well. And then this is, again, comparisons between five creeks, Dutch Bell, Green Valley, and Mill Creek, not necessarily Marquess Creek. But again, you can see that in Dutch Bell Creek, where we had our flow enhanced project, we saw a lot more juveniles. So there were a lot of lessons learned in this particular process. We spent a lot of time working on like three different words in a document. We unfortunately probably should have started the effort earlier in the season, but what we're hoping to do this season is be a little bit more prepared for it. But what we did find is that it is an option in some of these watersheds, and we did see some good success. And it was really interesting how little water was necessary to keep these fish alive. Not necessarily thriving, but alive through the year. And though we don't think that this is a long-term solution to our issues, it is one of our options as a short-term emergency drought relief. And of course, I have to do my sales. If you do live in one of these watersheds and wish to come and talk to me about entering into a voluntary drought agreement, please let me know. We find as little as 3 acre feet of storage is enough between life and death for some of these fish. So we're willing to talk to just about anybody about it. And then also as part of this process, and I don't know where that funding is now, Mary Ann King at Trout Unlimited has been facilitating a large and very great donation by Jackson family of $20,000, which basically allowed us to fund a lot of these voluntary drought agreement projects, because sometimes just having enough money to pay for the pipe was critical in getting these projects in place as in time to do it. So I want to give a big thank you to Mary Ann King. And also John Green was critical. He was out there actually installing all the pipe for us at the last minute. So a lot of people went into doing this kind of work that we want to thank. So thank you. If you have any questions, please let me know.
So I had a question. What was the total release for the Jackson family? How many acre feet?
Up to 7 acre feet.
7 acres, and then the other one was 18?
Yes.
Okay, 7 acres. And so how long did that actually have a lasting effect, the 7 acre feet?
Well, we had them, they turned the pipes on August 25th. David, I don't know if he's here. I don't remember when they turned it on.
Pardon?
Right behind you.
Right behind me. when they turned it up. Do you know how much the total ended up being?
I think it was between 7 and 9, and
Okay. Cool.
Mr. Chair, just thank you, Corey, for that overview. It was very helpful, and thank you to everyone who participated in it. I mean, it's really a tremendous testimonial to everybody. You touched on, and you're right, I mean, this is a short-term emergency reaction. Hopefully, we come out of this current climate condition and get back to something closer to whatever normal is. But I think it does point out, you know, I was just looking at those pictures of the creek. And, you know, one of the things, one of the areas that I've been following is the research looking at how upland vegetation management affects subsurface water interception by plants. And, you know, so many people, we recognize that fire suppression and legacy of past logging has created vegetation communities that are much different than we've seen prior to logging or the cessation of fire. You know, we've got thousands of stems per acre, and they're all sucking up water. Unfortunately, I'm still dealing with the Valley Fire in Lake County, but one of the observations is, you know, 2 days after the fire, middle of summer, creeks are flowing. That water is released and it starts moving. So we have to start thinking about, we can make more water. We have to think about managing those groundwaters and the role vegetation plays in that and how we manage. And I'm not talking about clear-cutting hillsides. Most of the research is looking at about 40% of a watershed. If it's thinned in some way or somehow vegetation is manipulated, you can release enough water. So there are things, again, that we can do culturally and through society. It may be difficult because some people are concerned about cutting trees or removing vegetation. But we have to throw it out there. That is a viable option to try and create and free up more water through these watersheds in those late periods of the summer. And I just wanted to use this venue as an opportunity to go on record as saying, you know, I think we, again, like I said earlier, these are big problems. We need to think big. And we need to think of the role of vegetation, water interception, and surface waters, how those are tied together and how we can do a better job at managing those three components. I wish I knew how to do it, but.
Board Member Hale?
Yeah, one quick note about your observation of the increased flows in Mark West following the Napa earthquake. Same thing happened after the 92 Honeydew earthquake, and I think it was either on the Navarro, or not, excuse me, the Mattol, or maybe a smaller trib like Bull Creek, but they've got records of that from you know, the USGS gauge. So if you're kind of looking to more information on that phenomenon, I know that was documented from that, and maybe others as well in the literature, but that's something that may be a little bit closer to home that there, you know, would have happened on.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Corey, hi again. I was at the Forestville meeting when you were there. That was a tough meeting, I know, and I think some of you fellows were there too. And you know, there was quite a lot of uplift from the community out there, trying to not only inform but then to ask for things. And I'm curious because I assume this is going to happen again. I think we'd be fools to think that it's not. And when I look at the efforts that were put forth, they were. It was very interesting to see how that rolled out. You had mentioned that, you know, it was late. No doubt it was late. The emergency was on. And I'm curious because Fish and Wildlife actually has authority under existing water rights, I believe. You set conditions for water rights, and you have authority, at least some of the biological component of authority under water rights. So I'm curious about the tools that were used were basically, as I saw it, you know, it was made up on the fly, and granted, that's how it was done because the emergency was on. But looking back with the luxury in the rearview mirror at this point in time, what authority does your agency actually have under water rights, the impoundment of water? The impoundment of water is a vested right, but it's conditioned. And so I would ask you, and maybe I know you're part of this, but what authority then could be used besides, you know, here's a couple landowners that had water impounded behind ponds. There's definitely other water behind ponds in those watersheds. The Camp Meeker situation was actually quite interesting because it essentially just put water in a circle, right, out of their well in the Russian River and brought it up to the top of the top portion of the watershed and released it. What authority does Fish and Wildlife have under water right, existing water right, then that you could use? Because when push comes to shove, that's sometimes what it's going to come to.
Right. And so we're constantly working with the State Water Resources Control Board's permitting staff in their reviews of water rights and looking at the public trust effects of those water rights. So there is that opportunity to condition water rights with a flow enhancement recommendation. And we actually do have a couple projects that are sitting in line that do have those as conditions of their water rights.
It's even the condition of bypass, I believe, right? I mean, that's there. The one thing about that water, I believe, in those ponds, I worked on one of those properties in Green Valley. I happened to work on it as a consultant because it was for sale. Mm-hmm. And I'd looked at that pond and, you know, granted, that water wasn't super high-quality water, for sure. The best thing about that water was wet, right? And it was available, frankly. And it was late summer, and it was warm. And you know, that's just the way it was out there. And it was all hands on deck. But I'm curious, and I'll ask each one of you this, what tools do we need to develop for the next time this happens? The one thing is we need some social tools, which is education, inclusion, because I think part of the issue was is that, frankly, some folks were left out, and that was part of the big rancor. When it came to just trying to ask people to do things. But what tools do we have or do we need to develop to go forward when the next time this happens? Because it's going to happen again, I believe.
I think this is our new normal, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, it is. You know, and I've looked at enough water rights and how they're written, and some of them are really old and really kind of outdated, and I get it. Water rights are super complicated. But there is vested authority, and it is conditioned. I believe most of them were always conditioned, at least on some aspect of the granting of right. It's a vested right, but it is a conditioned vested right.
You know, there's several different ways. You know, there's also our department's 1600 authority. You know, the nice thing about the voluntary drought, we could, you know, approve these projects under the voluntary drought initiative process, which had some specialized exemptions, which as if the drought goes away, that opportunity goes away as well. So we're also already starting to have those conversations about if we want to continue these types of project in the future, how exactly are we going to get those through the process? So there's multiple different ways. In some cases, the water right's the best way to deal with it. In other cases, it could be a 1600. So it, unfortunately, this is kind of a site case-by-case basis, but yeah. I agree. Any options that we have to facilitate permitting for enhancement projects?
Well, and I would also say that, you know, this needs to come down to the local, too, because we have an administrative well permitting process in Sonoma County. This isn't just about surface water. This is very much about all water. And that the gaining and losing of those creeks by your hydrographs is actually not only a function of climate, it's a function of use and the developed use. And by the way, I have a well. I'm part of the problem. I fully admit it, right? I finally stuck a meter on my well this year just because I wanted to know what my water use was, because I didn't know. And I'm interested then, you know, I think we need to push this all the way from the feds, basically all the way down state, local. We need to bring this process forward, so when this happens again, we need to think about what we're doing out here to we're effectively dewatering our watersheds in one way or another just by population and land use, whether it be surface water diversions. This isn't all about surface water diversions. And I'm interested in the tools that we develop from here forward for the next time this happens. Thanks. I didn't mean to pick on you.
Any other board comment, questions? Any staff comments? Any comments from the audience? Okay, I think this time we really are going to...
No, hold on. You got these details.
I'm sorry. I just... John? Okay. Well, I wanted that as part of the presentation when I did that, so... I'm sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off.
Well, so next up is Dan Schultz, who's going to, you know, again, tell us about the regulatory tools that were brought to bear this summer.
And when I ask for more staff presentation, that's the time to jump up and say yes. So
I didn't realize you were moving on.
Yeah.
So thank you, Brian, and thank you, board chair and board members, for having us here today. As Brian mentioned, my name is Dan Schultz, and I'm with the Division of Water Rights, State Water Resources Control Board. And I'm going to provide a update on the Russian River Tributaries Emergency Regulation. And then my co-part, Dan Wirth, will talk about some of the long-term actions. So the presentation outline here, we'll do a quick overview of the Tributaries Emergency Regulation, and then cover some of the information that was submitted in response to the informational order, some potential additional short-term actions, and then long-term actions focusing on the California Water Action Plan. So the Russian River Tributary Emergency Regulation went into effect July 6, 2015, and emergency regulations are in effect for 270 days, and so it expires on April 1, 2016. The emergency regulation was targeted to help protect coho salmon and steelhead juvenile rearing habitat in four priority tributaries: Dutchbill Creek, Green Valley Creek, Markwest Creek, and Mill Creek. There are two components of this emergency regulation was the enhanced water conservation measures, and these measures were intended to help reduce the rate of flow recession and maintains minimal hydrologic connectivity in these watersheds to protect or to keep temperatures as low as possible in the pools and dissolved oxygen levels as high as possible. Oops, sorry, went too fast there. So amongst other things, the enhanced water conservation measures included a prohibition on watering of ornamental turf, and they included 2 days of watering per week and certain hours and times of watering as well for more of the landscape and plants and trees. The other component of the regulation was the informational order, and the purpose of the informational order was to gather more information on where and how much water was being used and what the potential impacts of that water use was on surface water, looking at both surface water and groundwater. The enhanced water conservation measures were targeting the upper watersheds where the primary rearing habitat was, and the informational order was looking at the entire watershed, recognizing that if the drought conditions continued into the fall and into the winter, there may be some additional need for additional conservation measures to address some of the passage and spawning habitat. So as part of this effort, we had quite a few outreach meetings in the area. We had five July outreach meetings in from the 6th to the 9th after the regulation was approved by the Office of Administrative Law. We held one in Occidental, one in Healdsburg, Forestville, and then two here in Santa Rosa, a day and an evening meeting. We estimate about 700 to 900 people attended these meetings. We also had a follow-up meeting on November 2nd. That was part of the request from the stakeholders that we would come back and discuss some of the conservation measures' effectiveness and where we were at that point of the year, as well as some preliminary results of the informational order. And we estimate about 60 people attended that. So the informational order, we began issuing that, and we issued it by watershed. And we issued it starting August 26th through September 18th. The last watershed that it was issued to, it was done alphabetically, was Mill Creek. And people needed to respond by 30 days after receipt of the informational order. And so that due date was determined to be October 23rd. From that initial informational order, we received about a 50% response rate, which was pretty consistent across the watersheds. So we followed that up with a reminder notice that we issued on October 28th through the 30th. Again, we did two watersheds, Dutch Bill and Green Valley, and then Mark West and Mill Creek on two different days. And within that informational order reminder, it did also notify people that received it that we would be potentially following up with administrative civil liability complaints if they did not respond within the 20 days. After that was issued, we had about an 80% response rate as of December 13th, 2015. So on December 15th, 2015, we issued administrative civil liability complaints to approximately 1,881 parcels. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact number of people because some people own more than one parcel in the watershed. And that went to both parcels and some water purveyors that had not responded or made any or had not contacted us yet as of that date. The administrative civil liability complaint, or ACL, included three options for the landowners or the purveyors that they had. One, they could request a hearing before the State Water Board and you know, tell the State Water Board why they felt they couldn't respond during that time period or didn't need to respond. The second one was they could accept a settlement offer that we included. The settlement offer was, if you respond within 20 days, we will drop all fines. There will be no fine whatsoever. And the third option was, if you do nothing, then you will be issued a $2,500 fine. So as of January 21st, we have a 90% response rate at this point. And I think that's pretty inclusive. There are some cases where we have some things we need to follow up on, mailing addresses that are incorrect in some of those situations. At this rate, we have one hearing request. We had a total of four and one hearing request that's still standing. And we have a number that we're still following up with. You know, the purpose of this effort is not to go out and find people. It's just to try to collect a complete data set. And so we've been trying to encourage people to respond or contact us and get the correct information as best as possible. We are getting to a point where most of the people that have received the ACL's complaints have had them for more than 20 days and have not contacted us or made any effort to respond. So the time period for those people to start doing some action is getting limited. So now it's a brief overview of some of the just general information. These pie charts are just the water source that's reported on the parcels by the different watersheds. The green is no water available on that parcel. The orange is groundwater. The light blue is surface water diversions. The purple is contract water. And the dark blue is multiple sources, such as potentially someone that gets their water from a water purveyor and also has a surface water diversion. And then the maroonish color is people that are served by water supplier. And we also, I don't have them here. I brought some to hang up, but it just didn't quite work to hang them up here. We have some maps available on our website, so there'll be a link at the end that are updated that show the distribution of wells in the different watersheds and some more summary statistics. So the next steps in the short term is we're working on completing the informational order data collection that's following up on the ACL complaints, as well as we have a number of responses that we received that are incomplete and we need to follow up with them, such as individuals that didn't put any water use information in or well locations that are clearly inaccurate. So we're going to follow up on that to make sure we get as complete data set as possible. We're consistently working on running a quality control of that submitted data. And then we'll start, once we feel we have a good grasp on the data that was submitted and we feel we have a pretty good data set, we'll start running some preliminary data analysis. And then as far as the emergency regulation goes, we're continually through the spring working with Department of Fish and Wildlife and your staff and National Marine Fisheries Service to evaluate the precipitation and stream flow data to see where we are moving forward as far as, you know, what measures may be needed this year or in the near term. So we are considering the readoption of the emergency regulation for the State Water Board in March 2016. That general time period is selected because it would allow for continuance of the emergency regulation, which would expire April 1st. Now I'll pass it on over to Dan Wirth, who will talk about some of the long-term actions.
Good afternoon. My name is Daniel Wirth. I'm a senior environmental scientist for the Division of Water Rights, and I oversee the in-stream flow unit. It's a new unit, and we are working on a piece of the California Water Action Plan. So the California Water Action Plan was published January 22, 2014. It was developed at the direction of Governor Brown by the California Department of Food and Agriculture, the California Environmental Protection Agency, and the California Natural Resource Agency. The plan will guide state efforts to enhance water supply reliability, to restore damaged and destroyed ecosystems, and to improve the resilience of California's infrastructure. And it outlines California's near and long-term water priorities, including drought. So one of the actions within the Water Action Plan is to protect and restore important ecosystems. And there's a sub-action within that action, which is to enhance water flows in stream systems statewide. And that's the piece that our new in-stream flow unit is working on. So that sub-action says that the State Water Resources Control Board and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will implement a suite of individual and coordinated administrative efforts to enhance flows statewide in at least 5 stream systems that support critical habitat for anadromous fish. These actions include developing defensible, cost-effective, and time-sensitive approaches to establish in-stream flows using sound science and a transparent public process. When developing and implementing this action, the State Water Resources Control Board and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will consider their public trust responsibilities and existing statutory authorities, such as maintaining fish in good condition. And that can be found on page 12 of the Water Action Plan. So some of the key points is that it's a collaborative effort between the State Water Board and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We will work on enhancing and establishing flows. It'll be transparent public process, and we'll use cost-effective, time-sensitive approaches to establishing in-stream flows using sound science. So the watersheds that have been identified for this work are Marquess Creek, which is tributary to the Russian River, Mill Creek, which is tributary to the Sacramento River, the Shasta River, tributary to the Klamath, South Fork Eel, tributary to the Eel, and Ventura River. So 3 out of the 5 watersheds identified for the Water Action Plan work are within this region. So to date, I was hired about 6 months ago, and we've been working on hiring staff and putting together work plans and getting things started. So it's a new effort. And to date, we've held meetings with the regional and headquarters staff for DFW and the State Water Board, and we've held meetings in 4 out of the 5 watersheds. We have not met with regional staff down in the Ventura yet. We're planning on doing that in February. So we're also working on developing contracts for hydrology and groundwater modeling. and we're developing a contract for a water rights evaluation tool so that we can evaluate different management scenarios and understand their potential impacts on water rights. We're identifying gauging needs and compiling and evaluating existing information. So within Region 1, so within Marquess Creek, South Fork Eel, and the Shasta, we've held two public outreach workshops in this room, one in December and one on Tuesday of this week. And the purpose of these workshops was to get all of the different groups in the watershed that are working on water issues and fish issues, get them into the same room and invite the public and have kind of an open forum for the public to interact with all these different groups and have a one-stop shop for the exchange of information on water issues and fish issues. And we are also working to establish a USGS contract for a groundwater surface water interaction model for the entire Russian River watershed. And we're coordinating with our groundwater unit that's working on SGMA. And it's a joint effort between Sonoma County Water Agency, the State Water Board, and potentially others that are interested in contributing funding towards this contract. So it's designed to build a tool that helps us evaluate groundwater and surface water use and management scenarios for the entire Russian River watershed. And so we've been coordinating with Brian McFadden from your region, and we appreciate his help so far. And I think moving forward, we appreciate the opportunity to hold events in this facility and to coordinate with your staff. So that's where we're at, and we're working on developing work plans internally, and it's something that we can certainly share with staff here as we finish up those work plans on these three watersheds in your region. And that's all of our presentation. So if you guys have any questions or comments, we can...
Questions for board members. Board Member Hale.
Great, thanks. Thanks for your presentations. This may be for Dan or Dan or Brian. I appreciate what was done on the Russian, and particularly for some of the listed rivers on water bodies in the water action plan. I'm curious why I don't see the Scott River on there. And arguably that's one of our, you know, more contentious yet very important rivers that we have. And I would think the impacts have been fairly well demonstrated and documented, particularly during low flows. So I wonder if anybody's willing to step into the Siskiyou County Scott River arena and answer that question for me.
That one's probably me.
Okay.
The way we selected the five, Scott River was on the larger list. One of the things that was one of our criteria for selection was opportunities for success. Mm-hmm. And as well as a stakeholder involvement in the area, along with we had about 10 other ones. There was a number in this region that did rise up to the top. However, we tried to prioritize the three and three that we felt we could do make significant progress within 5 years. So it's not that we're not looking at the Scott. It's just that they didn't make this list because of the nature of what we were trying to accomplish in a short period of time, you know, thinking that it's probably going to take a longer effort in the Scott to get where we need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious. It's, you know, with something with, you know, looking at Marquess and our population density and being able to, with the folks, I'm looking at a number of, I was over, what, 1,000 outstanding returns for trying to get responses from folks. And, you know, you're probably only looking at the number in the 10s or 20s for something up on the Scott. Just, you know, larger land holdings, and maybe the opportunity for success would be greater. So I personally would like to think that there's room for reevaluation or an opportunity to do that, because particularly for its importance for Coho, it shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah, I think, that's an aside effort. I know that the California Department of Fish and Wildlife at the headquarters, the Water Branch, has been developing study plans for the Scott as well. I believe they're looking at this point to see if there's any nonprofits or other entities that would be willing to start to, look for some grant funds to carry out those studies.
Okay. And I'd like to take the opportunity to tell you a little bit about what is happening in the Scott that's not associated with the California Water Action Plan related to flows. This board has heard from Dr. Harder a number of times about the groundwater work that we've been supporting and that he's been doing. And that has resulted now in implementation of some projects to recharge groundwater in the alluvial areas to augment summer flows. There was a pilot project on the Brian Morris Ranch an effort in trying to understand what the regulatory hurdles are, but also do some monitoring to show, does this idea have validity? And that's gone forward. There's some published articles I could send around that describe some of those results. UC Davis has been involved in a larger way. Dr. Helen Dahlke has been involved in that, and she's part of an initiative that is coming out of UC Davis to use agricultural lands to recharge groundwater in a larger scale than just a couple fields. And so following up on that, just last week, there was a temporary change petition that was approved by the state board that allows for recharge of, I think it's 3,400 acres, the area serviced by the Scott Valley Irrigation District, which is much larger than the pilot project. The pilot project was something more like 40 or 80 acres. I'm very excited about that. That's a project that comes directly out of the work that we've been supporting with Dr. Harder, showing that that's a viable option. So this will be a project to validate the model in a great sense, but also get some flow augmentation. You can spin that a number of ways. Maybe it's not flow augmentation, considering the historic conditions. But I also do want to mention that, while the Scott Valley flows, Scott River flows are well understood to be an issue in the support of salmonids and coho are present in that watershed. The majority of the rearing areas in Scott Valley, in the Scott River watershed, are in the tributaries, and the Scott Valley Water Trust our Scott River Water Trust has been very active in trying to maintain subsistence flows in those areas and have been largely successful. It's kind of like the effort that happened here in the Russian, though they're doing it every year because it's an issue every year for them up there. So I just wanted to mention those efforts.
No, I very much appreciate it. Thank you, Brian. That has answered my question. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Dan Schultz, can I ask you? You mentioned the readoption of the emergency order. Can you fill that in a little bit? What do you envision, or what does the State Board envision then as the readoption of the emergency order?
We are still evaluating with the conditions as far as whether we would bring the entire regulation back for adoption, whether it would be a portion of it or additional measures or anything else. So at this point, we haven't had an opportunity to really brief our board, so we don't really have, I don't have much to say as far as exactly what will happen. We've been working with Department of Fish and Wildlife and your staff to kind of get an idea of what they think is necessary as far as with the rains we have so far this year and how the winter's out is looking.
Yeah, certainly going through the angst of last year and establishing that order and the courage, the regulatory courage that took to do by the State Board and others to make that happen, and by the way, the Fish and Wildlife and others, It seems like it would be a dirty darn shame to let that slip away. And at the same time, the coarseness of that data that came in, I helped some people do some kind of, you know, trying to estimate. And then there was the default values. And that's really what kind of prompted me to put a meter on my well, because I didn't know. And so it's very interesting. It seems like part of this needs to be a dissemination back to the regulated community here to say, hey, guys, this is what we know, this is what we don't know, this is what we learned, and this is what we need to learn. So next time this happens, we have a better idea and a better idea how then we could progress through a drought situation, a low flow condition, for the specific purpose of saving fish, remaining pool connectivity, you know, managing temperatures and all that kind of thing. It seems like a golden opportunity, and I would certainly advocate from here that having a readoption in some form of that order would be probably very smart. And to use and further develop some of that information and tools going forward.
Thank you.
Just and my two cents.
Yeah, I think the information we have collected, as Dan mentioned, Mr. Worth mentioned, they're moving forward with working with USGS as far as the surface groundwater model. A lot of that information can be folded into there to provide better predictability in that model as well.
Yeah.
And we also have a better grasp on the surface water diversions in the watershed at this point, too, from a quick snapshot of the data.
Great. Dan Worth, can I ask you a question, too, as a follow-up? That, you know, for one thing, we certainly do appreciate having three of the five watersheds in the North Coast region as being identified to need flow studies. And flow studies, I think, are fundamental to doing anything, whether regulatory, legally, or otherwise here. We need a scientific basis from which to make decisions and inform decisions from. So for one thing, thank you collectively to the state of California for identifying three of our watersheds. At the same time, what is the time frame that you see and you expect for those to be done in the priority and kind of the semblance of order that you see coming here? How long will it take, and what kind of effort? I mean, it sounds like you're just, you said, I think you were hired 6 months ago.
Correct.
I appreciate the level of work that's going to take.
Yeah, so we are still working on putting together our work plans and getting a timeline together. With that being said, there's certain tools that we need. We need tools to understand the hydrology in the watersheds. So in some of these watersheds, there's not great gauging. So having a unimpaired hydrology model that helps us understand what flows are in different parts of the watershed is really important. So that's a tool that we need to get in place. And we're working on getting those contracts in place as soon as possible. And hopefully we'll have those models done within the next year or two.
So you think you would actually have a flow study done in 2 years here on these watersheds?
In terms of flow studies, we're working with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and they are conducting flow studies on these five watersheds, and they're in the process of developing study plans for these watersheds. On Mill Creek, which is tributary to the Sacramento River, they're expecting that they'll have a technical report, which is kind of the final product of their flow study. That's expected in mid-2016. So that's how we get the flow studies. That's one of the first ones we'll get is Mill Creek. But they're still working on putting together a study plan for South Fork Eel. There's study plans that have been approved on the Shasta, but those are just plans, so that there needs to be an implementation of those plans, and we're evaluating how we can get those plans implemented. And then there's other tools, like a water rights evaluation tool. We're trying to get that contract in place.
So, you mentioned that. That's I even wrote that down and with a question mark, you know, the water right evaluation tool sounds very interesting. Sounds intriguing.
It's a very important piece so that we can evaluate what different in-stream flow requirements might do to water right holders.
Yeah.
So that's it's a key piece, and I don't see us moving forward without having that in place.
Yeah.
So
given the legality.
Getting these tools in place is really critical, and we're trying to get them in place as fast as we can. And then there's potentially other components to reaching the end goal, which is to have a in-stream flow objectives that are put in place through through policies. So there's CEQA work that needs to be done, and there's policy work, and the ultimate goal is to have in-stream flow objectives that are implemented through a policy for water quality control and water right actions.
Thank you. Well, and thank you all. I think, you know, the drought, as much of a bummer as that was to go through, at least last year as part of it, I do believe it was an opportunity. And I do believe getting here, even though it was hard, is certainly worth it. It's certainly worth it to look in the rearview mirror, which you did a little bit today for us, and I really appreciate that. Going forward, I would like to know, you know, how we as agencies then interact and mesh together to respond to the next time this does happen. I want to thank individually each of you for your efforts. Brian, you know, you as a staffer here have been a tremendous asset for us in your flow work. Your water right understanding, your temperature work, it all kind of came together very nicely. And your ability to work here locally has been just a huge asset for us. So I want to say thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. But, you know, these are the heroes here.
Yeah, I know.
And the people that donated
too.
The water.
I know.
my role is pretty small in that.
I know.
Thank you for the recognition.
Yeah, thank you all, though, for coming today. Yeah,
I just need to jump in real quick, David, about one of the things that you had talked about for building up the information database and trying to build up your models and understanding in such a fairly short period of time, to encourage you to look at other outside sources, private, academic. I've worked in both South Fork Eel and on the Shasta, and I know there's been a whole lot of efforts by others to model unregulated hydrographs and create long-term records for that. And so looking at flow timing, magnitude, duration, frequency, annual volumes, water year classification, there's a lot of information out there that may help you if you don't have that already. And I know some reports have been done for CDFW and some maybe just private efforts, but there's a fair amount of information out there.
I had a question. I think I understand water rights. I think I understand SGMA. I think I understand fish and game stream bed flows, and I think I understand setting water quality quantity flows. Where do you fit in? Are you doing this under authority of the California Water Action Plan, or how do you mesh into those programs? Because SGMA, I thought, took a lot of time, and that was a huge criticism of it. It looks like you found a solution for a little faster approaches. So if you could, and if it's just too complex, if you got something that's written up, I'll read about it. But it's hard for me to sort of figure out what slot you're in.
So there's a couple different ways, and it kind of depends on the stream and the situation. With the California Water Action Plan, it was a direct, it was directions from the governor to do this work, to identify the five
that.
And to develop it. So that's how we fit in on that. That gave us essentially the authority to go in and develop, to start the process of flow criteria and flow objective setting and five tributaries. For most of my work, I'm more in the Bay Delta watershed. And so under that component, we're looking at tributaries to the Sacramento River for the similar type work. And the connection there is again through legislation as far as developing in-stream flows as part of the Bay Delta Plan update and improving flows in the Delta. So recognizing that those are connected, not directly. My work under phase four in the tributaries is not connected to the Bay Delta Plan update, but it is a related effort that needs to happen to improve the fisheries.
Extremely short summary, is this correct? The California Water Action Plan trumps the dates of SGMA, and so that's how you're able to get in groundwater and get something done very quickly?
So there's going to be a link. So the connection here is that when SGMA comes around,
yeah,
and there's an in-stream flow requirement, and it's been identified that there is a connectivity between the surface water and the groundwater, SGMA, if it's a lower priority basin, it increases that basin's priority. In situations where it's already a higher priority basin, it means that the groundwater has to consider their impacts on surface water as well. So it brings it into that connectivity. When we go through this process, it will be an evaluation of what the appropriate steps are to take. We would anticipate and hope that we could work through a local cooperative solution to meet any flow objective or anything that's required, which would include which Sonoma County Water Agency is being very proactive in this area as far as looking at the needs of Sigma and everything else. So I think it's working with Sonoma County Water Agency, working with the other local entities to try to figure out the best way to meet a flow requirement to ensure that the fish are protected.
Okay, and one other question. In a very rudimentary way, the way I read your chart on informational items, informational reminder, you got a huge uptick when you had potential civil liability. Is that your interpretation of what you showed us?
Yeah, we had a... Well, it's a combination of things. Some people may have misplaced the original mailing or not received the original mailing, so maybe they got the second one. Maybe they were just putting it off and they didn't realize that time had passed. And that was one of the reasons we did the reminder notice.
Yeah.
So we did see that uptick. It was a 30% uptick. So that is significant.
Okay. And then Brian, and it may be we need to take a look in the Scott and the Shasta just on where we are, but my understanding is you have the Karuk groundwater study, and then there's one by the Yurok tribe. I haven't read that, plus Dr. Carter. And plus you got the litigation for the areas outside the current boundaries under the public trust doctrine by environmental ELF, yeah. But not the terrorist group ELF. I'm wondering whether at some point we need to take a look at the whole picture, and I realize those watersheds are very resistant to anything they don't do, but... where are we on that, and what do you view as the quality of some of those other approaches? And what I'm hearing is they actually coordinate fairly well, but do you share that view?
In regards to the models that are available,
yeah.
There's quite a disparity in the ability of the models to provide information on a spatial scale. The Karuk model and Dr. Harder's model, use the same basic platform of modeling, but Dr. Harder's model really looks at practices on a field-by-field basis,
mm-hmm.
looking at what crops are there and where what the source is. It's really like a second model that's added on top, and so that's really where the differences lie. And also, with the ability to calibrate and validate the model, Dr. Harder has a lot more data at his disposal to do that. I think moving forward, the combination of the Scott Valley Groundwater Advisory Committee and the involvement of UC Davis, the solutions that are out there are being identified and pursued. As far as a regulatory kind of component to make sure that happens and that the benefits that we're all going for actually occur. This is going to be something that comes to the state board because the adjudication there is the definition of an interconnected zone, which also by definition defines other areas as unconnected or not interconnected. Although both of those models show that's probably something that needs to be revisited. And, of course, I'm not an attorney. I'm an engineer. But the way I read it, there's some opportunity to expand that interconnected zone through an action of the state board, given the fact that the water code was altered to allow for that at the time of the original adjudication. I think that these are things that will play out in time, and we have a role to play, but we're not necessarily in the driver's seat in all those situations. And for the regional board, on our part, I think the important thing is to keep supporting the work that's identifying these solutions and to work with the state board in trying to find logical ways to implement those solutions, whether that be regulatory or proactive
voluntary efforts.
Okay.
I just wanted to...
And we got cards. Hey.
Before we take that public comment, I wanted to just follow up on Brian's point and, well, first of all, to thank all of you, Corey, Dan, and Dan, for coming and for the great presentations. Ditto some of the board members' comments of the appreciation that three of the five watersheds are within the North Coast region. And then just to state formally the regional board's commitment to working with the state board and the department as you do the flow studies. We very much want to participate and think that we have some technical expertise in Mr. McFadden, as well as just watershed understanding of the those three watersheds in particular. And as you know, as part of our triennial review, our board has endorsed the development of a flow study for the Navarro River to develop flow objectives. And so the other side of this is that we look forward to working with the division as we develop the flow study for the Navarro and work towards flow objectives for that watershed as well. So that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other board comment? I'll call on Kimberly Beer.
I don't mean to keep you guys any longer. I just want to thank these guys so much for all their incredible work and a lot of courage it took to go to a lot of those meetings and a lot of rancor. And I think a lot of the rancor really stemmed from the fact that people didn't feel like they were being treated fairly because there was a big users that were not required to do conservation enhancements. So that might be something to consider in the next year, is maybe consider including some of the bigger users in the conservation part of it. Maybe you figure out how you can identify in each watershed, some of the big users. And I'm talking about ag mostly. They weren't asked to do the enhanced conservation, but the information order was fantastic. I'm glad that went out to everybody, and it was watershed-wide. That was great. So I would consider maybe expanding who you include in the enhanced conservation part of the emergency regulations. I'm so happy you guys jumped in, did something, and didn't study it to death. I thought that was very important and not easy. In Atascadero, Green Valley Creek area, the wells are still being drilled. A lot of the groundwater, according to this chart, is a lot of the water source is groundwater, and there's no end in sight in the amount of wells that are being drilled, and the county is not really evaluating them. So I would say maybe there's room here for the state to talk about suspending well permits in some of these watersheds until we get a handle on what's going on. Not sure how that would work or how that would look, but temporary suspension, telling people now that there's going to be some important restrictions in place so they can take care of their water needs now without punching a lot more holes in the ground. The VDI, Voluntary Drought Initiative, tank program, I think is great. I'm not sure if it has a provision in there that says that the, getting your water agreements is not really a license to expand your operations, but it's just to help you maintain the operations that you have, but not to store water for an additional operation. So I'm hoping that that's part of the conditions. Maybe we can think about getting rid of the idea of drain tiles. In a lot of the ag areas, that they drain the water out of the watershed very quickly, and it could be percolating down. So if we're looking at ways to sort of recharge, keep the water in the ground longer for the summertime, that would be something, seems like an easy management thing that people could start thinking about doing differently. And I would say keep doing what you're doing. Thank you very much, and let's go for thriving salmon runs and see what we can do to increase the number of survival. And thank you all very, very much. Have a good lunch.
Yeah. The after dinner snack, right? I don't believe in, I've really already got two strikes against me, so I got to be careful here. I think we are finished with the agenda as far
we
as.
We are finished.
I'd like to revisit, you asked about future agenda items, and I want to just, I just would like to reiterate that I think we have a kindred spirit, because we've talked so much about water and fish today. I think we have a kindred spirit in Director Bonham with the Fish Department of Fish and Wildlife. I know you've invited them in the past.
Yeah.
I'd ask that we re-extend that invitation, and ideally what I'd love to see, not at the May meeting. We got enough in May.
Yeah,
what I'd like to see is, like we did with the Board of Forestry, to think about a joint meeting with the Cal Fish and Game Commission out in the field, going and looking at some of these projects, getting out of the sterile environment of a meeting room, kicking some dirt around, and, you know, talking about real stuff. So I know we've all got more to do, but that trip we did at Jackson with the board did more to getting back to what board member Noren said, how do we better communicate? You know, that did us a lot of good, that meeting. And so I'd like to make that request. Again, I know we got a lot on our plate, but we're at the beginning of the year, maybe, you know, way off in the distance. I'd like to seriously see that happen.
I think both of those are excellent suggestions, and I'll look forward to following up with staff on them. Since we did get back into board future agenda items, I'm not quite sure whether it goes into study session or action section, but our water management plans that are provided for in our marijuana ordinance, we have a lot of red flags how we're going to coordinate with a very sophisticated and more complex state set of approaches. And on the other hand, if we defer to them, some of them may take years, and no one's going to apply for a marijuana or permit for water quality if they got to wait years for them. So I think that's a major issue that needs to be fleshed out. I do think we need to get a plan. This a little bit probably meeting with the attorneys, because we're losing Samantha. And so there was a lot of, we're supposed to have our handbook ready to go, so our staff know what they can say or not say. Then there's some tweaks, because I heard a tape of a Department of Justice official. They want playgrounds, not in response to us, but they want playgrounds added to our list of areas where you're not to have pot grows near. So I think we need to have a update on the pot ordinance, and then a realistic appraisal, what's working, what isn't, and probably sooner than later, but not May.
Definitely. So we were planning to have an informational update at the April meeting.
Yeah.
But I think that the discussion on the contents of the water management plans would probably be something that would come later in the summer. Those are great suggestions. And we will definitely, we haven't forgotten about the handbook, and it's in draft, and soon we'll be able to share that with you.
I'm not trying to be critical, because it's a new program, a lot of exotic law for us and exotic regulation. But I actually think that it warrants me meeting with staff to try and work on it a little bit to get it in shape for April.
Great. Thanks, John.
February, our drop dead date is out there, and I think we heard good comment from people. Well, where's the there on the certification program? Where's the there on some of this stuff? And so we just need to find the best way to allocate staff to keep the program moving. So throw that into the agenda. All right, anything else? And then I really am going to adjourn to pizza.
Well,
oh, no?
I don't do it.
Okay.
Pizza.